Now, before we start today's discussion, the sermon, the exposition, let us pay our homage to the Perfect One by chanting the Namaskara, and thereafter we will all observe in five precepts. And in order to do so, let us all together have a firm resolve that through the observance of these five precepts and through the homage that we pay towards the Perfect One, let us all understand the exposition that was once revealed 2,500 years ago by the Perfect One, our Lord Buddha. So in order to do so, let us chant Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So before we start today's sermon, let us take a moment to be reminded of all the revilement, desecration and slander that we may have directed towards the Noble Ones and the Sambuddha Sasana. Having that in our minds, let us seek for forgiveness for all the bad deeds that we may have done, all the desecrations, revilement and slander that we may have directed towards them, either knowingly or unknowingly. Okay. So I'm talking to our extended family. So you all have been listening to the sermons all this long, but you have been doing so maybe a few kilometers away from this monastery. But the physical distance does not let you to be away from this truth that we speak about. You may live maybe a few kilometers away from the monastery, but you're not away from the truth. Because with the truth, we are all connected. That is what is important. Therefore, I don't consider you as guests to this monastery. Rather, you are our extended family. But we cordially welcome you all, nonetheless. This is our home. This is where we reside. And among of you, I know for sure, because if you practice what we practice, there are people among you. Unless, of course, it was not for the duties and responsibilities that you have, you all are also awaiting to be one of us. It is all the duties and responsibilities that you are bound to, that which keep you in the life that you have, but still, you are connected with the truth because you have realized something within yourself, within the life. Therefore, something that you realize cannot be unrealized. Can you ever unrealize something if you have realized? Let's take for an example a little child who would like to enjoy the horizon. And when he sees it, he talks to his parents, Mama and Papa, I'd like to go there and I want to touch the sky. Can you see that line? There it connects the sea or the ground with the sky. So, can I go there? I want to touch those clouds. I want to feel how soft they are. But you know that this child cannot be realized all of this at once. Therefore, you tell a small lie, a white lie. You say that, oh, it's so long. It would take us a few hours to reach there. By the time we reach there, it would be more dark and you wouldn't be able to see the clouds. Therefore, it didn't do the purpose. Therefore, let's go another time. And you would postpone it. But when the child goes to the school, he understands and finally realizes that horizon, although we see that, it is just a visual illusion. Having realized that, would the child have to, when he sees the horizon again, would the child have to reflect on what he have learned, what he has learned in school? Oh no, this is just a visual illusion. This is no longer there. I don't believe in this. Does he have to repeat to himself? Or it has embedded within the roots of his mind that it is just a visual illusion. Therefore, I believe everyone, if not all, most of you have realized something with your life. That is why you come here. Spending all that time, money, energy and everything, you believe that something is to be examined or investigated deeper because you have already realized something within yourself. You have also seen the illusion within you. What is that illusion? Basically, the illusion that we talk about is the pleasure. Through the sermons that you have gone through, I believe that every one of you, or most of you, are familiar with this concept of pleasure. This is what we talk about. This is very simple, as well as it is so fine. That is why it is very intricate. We need the guidance of a teacher. In fact, I myself is being guided by my teachers. If not for my teachers, I wouldn't be here. I was also listening to the sermons like you, sitting in one of those chairs, and I was also counting my fingers. When can I complete this realization? When can I do that? I'm sure your fingers are crossed at this. You're not only counting days, you might be making plans. Therefore, I'm talking about something to be realized within ourselves. So let us dig deep and investigate further using our own life experiences, whether this is a truth, this pleasure, whether it is a truth or just an illusion. What do you think? Having spent all those kilometers that you have come this far, when you have finally reached here, how did you feel it? It was pleasurable, wasn't it? Oh, finally we have arrived. Right? So you were happy. And it is exactly that we are talking about. It's a very fine and intricate pleasure. Now, of course, you might appreciate what I say, the big pleasures that you come across in your life. For example, if you eat a piece of cake, if you have a piece of cake, a nice one, the flavor that you love the most. Let's imagine, I don't know your favorite flavor, right? You apply it to yourself. Let's say, for some of you, it may be chocolate. For some of you, it may be butterscotch, whatever, right? Or strawberry. Now, this piece of cake is right in front of you, and you're about to have it. Now, while you munch on it, while you taste it, now you enjoy this pleasure. These pleasures are very straightforward. Now you know how to practice that, practice the path, that practice what you have learned as a theory while listening to the sermons. I'm sure that most of you do that. But my problem is, are you sensitive to all those fine and intricate pleasures that we come across in our lives? So when you go along this life, your wisdom improves. The improved wisdom helps you to see and visualize these fine pleasures where you don't appreciate, where you haven't appreciated them as pleasures before. But they are also very fine and intricate pleasures. So let's revise ourselves. What do we mean by this pleasure? Okay, before that, let me start from the very beginning. People talk about happiness, of course, as well as they are talking about suffering, sadness. What do you mean by suffering is not the physical pain. It's the mental suffering. What we refer to as generally as sadness. And people think that it is, yes, sadness is a result of a cause. And they also have a cause for this sadness. What they think, whom do I mean as they? They are the people who have not listened to the teachings of the Buddha, right? Including ourselves before we got hold of this truth, right? Including myself. I also thought like this. How? I become sad when I don't have what I like. So the cause of my sadness is not having what I want. Or not having, simply. Not having something gives rise to sadness. Excuse me. So, are you all with me? Do you agree with that? Okay. Now, with the help of Dhamma, you might not agree with me, but that is what we have believed. For some of you, the remnants of such thoughts would be still there in your minds. So it is our duty and our responsibility to clean this view, which is the truth. So be open-minded and investigate your mind, which is the truth. So let us investigate. So let us say, let me summarize it. Suffering is caused by, I'm sorry for my illegible letters, right? I'll try my best to write legible letters, right? So people say that because I used to be a doctor in my lay life, so doctors are notorious for having legible letters, right? So excuse me for that. So suffering is caused by not having, or simply absence of what we like. For example, people say that if we like money, suffering is caused by not having money, not having enough money. And if you want, let's say, free time or leisure time, if you are very busy, if you are a very busy person, you might be suffering from not having enough free time since you are busy. Likewise, not having what we want is the cause of suffering. Not having leads to suffering. But at the same time, we all know how causes and effects work, right? Causes give rise to effects. If this is the case, what do you think? When the causes are there, I'll sign it as positive, right? When the causes are present, the effects will be present. When the causes are absent, the effects will be absent. Would this happen the other way around? When the causes are present, the effect is absent. Can that ever happen? No. When the causes are absent, the effect is present. Will that happen as well? No. So, this is how the causes and effects work. Only the effects will only be present with the presence of causes. Okay, now let us see whether that remains the truth when we apply to our personal life experiences, right? Now you don't have money. Money is absent, right? Money is absent. So what should be the result of it? The effect should be? Should it be present or absent? It should be absent. What is the effect? Suffering. When money is absent, what should happen to the suffering? The suffering should be absent. But what has happened? When money is not there, the suffering is present. And when you have money, suffering is not there. So, does this remain the truth? If we apply that to our general life experiences? No. So what can you say about it? What can you say about not having what you like? Can that be the true cause of suffering? You might feel that, yes, that is the real cause of suffering. I suffer because I don't have what I like. If what you like is the cause of your suffering, when you don't have that, when that is absent, the suffering should be absent. Some of you might say that absence is present, right? I can read your minds. Some of you might say that absence is present. So what is the effect? What is the net effect? Absence, the presence of absence means, all in all, it is the absence, right? You cannot say that absence is present, right? What remains as absence? That is the absence of the cause. So, if suffering is present, the cause of suffering cannot be absent. That must be something which is present. Okay, now, because of that, now we know that not having something cannot be the real cause of this suffering. It should be something which is present. It cannot be something which is absent. Okay, now that is the first kind of logic that we are going to analyze. Okay, now there's another logic. Now, for example, let's say, have you seen fire? Right? Fire is also an effect. Fire is caused by three causes. You all have learned in your very small ages, right? In your science lessons. What are the causes for fire? There should be a flammable object or fuel. Then oxygen. Then the combustion temperature. So when all these causes occur, let's say when these causes occur here, where will the fire manifest? Will the fire manifest here? The fire manifests where the causes have come together. So they coincide. They coincide where the causes are. That means they are superimposed. The effect manifests where the causes are aligned. Then, the logic is here. Where is suffering? Have you seen your suffering? What color is it? Is it dark blue? Or is it light yellow? What color is your suffering? What is the shape of your suffering? Is it rectangular? No, you haven't seen suffering. Why? Because it occurs in your mind. Okay. Where are the things that you like? For example, money. Is it in your mind or is it in your bank? Can you understand now? Now, how can the money which is in your bank account cause suffering in your mind? Because as you said, fire occurs where the causes manifest, where the causes have come together. If the causes come together here, fire wouldn't manifest somewhere else. The fire manifests where the causes are lined up. Now the cause is money. The causes are lined up in your bank account. Now where should the suffering be then? Your bank account should suffer then. Will the bank account cry out, "Oh, I'm suffering"? No, your mind cries out. Do you understand? So when you don't have what you like, which is outside of your mind suffers. That is not possible. Right? Now we have gone through two logics. The first one being, the causes cannot be absent when the effect is present. The suffering is present in your mind, but the cause that you refer to is absent. I don't have time. I don't have friends. I don't have money. I don't have company. I'm so lonely. I don't have many things. You name it. If you don't have something that you like, don't tell me that you're happy. Your mind suffers. And the belief is, it is the absence of something which lies outside the mind which causes suffering inside the mind. That is completely illogical. So what is the conclusion that we can gain through this? That is, the true cause of suffering should be something that which lies in your mind, and that should be present. So the true cause of suffering should be present in your mind. Okay, now my next question is, what is that? Right? What do you think that is? You already know the answer. Why do you suffer? What do I mean by suffering? This vexation, this pressure, this frustration, that which doesn't let you sleep, that which doesn't let you be calm and to continue your work. For example, for a child who is waiting for their exams. Now, just imagine they are studying. They are studying and they are preparing themselves for an exam. Let's say that the exam is just tomorrow. Now they know this is the final few hours that they can make themselves ready. Now they can feel rumbling in their tummy. And they know there's a delicious piece of cake in the fridge. Now, what does he do? Can he ignore that rumbling? Can he ignore that frustration that occurs in the mind and continue with his studies? What do you think? Yes, he might be able to, with willpower and devotion for some time. Yes, I agree. But how long can he do that? For how long? I'm just talking about a small child who is studying for an exam. But you can apply that, the same theory, to your lives. How long have you been able to tolerate the pressures, the vexation, the frustration? There's always a limit. When you reach the limit, it always releases. The pressure is released. A vexed mind acts like a pressure cooker. I'm sure all of you have heard this classical example. Do you know how a pressure cooker works? You apply some water into the pressure cooker, which is the cooking utensil, right? And that is an airtight compartment. And do you apply someone inside to the pressure cooker to open the valve? No? No, you don't, right? And when you keep the water inside the pressure cooker on the heat, which supply the continuous amount of heat from underneath, and the water starts boiling inside, then the pressure increases because it's an airtight compartment. The pressure increases. This increased pressure, what does it do? It exerts, because you might have noticed there's a nozzle on the top of the lid, and this nozzle is, by default, it is covered by a piece of metal which has some weight. Because it is normally covered, the pressure doesn't get away. It gets accumulated inside. When the pressure increases, this increased pressure exerts an increasingly large force upwards on that piece of metal which covers that nozzle. When this force gets more, I mean, if it is, when this is increased, the pressure, when the pressure is increased, this force becomes even greater. When there's an imbalance between the forces which acts on this piece of metal, the weight and the uplift force, this is lifted up. No one lifts it, right? There was no one inside the pressure cooker, but still, this uplift force lifts this up. So why do people have come up with this kind of a mechanism to in the pressure cooker? Because they want to ensure the safety of the pressure cooker. Otherwise, the pressure cooker would be blasted. This nozzle ensures the safety of this pressure cooker. This is exactly what happens in our minds. There's a safety mechanism in our minds. When the mind becomes pressurized, it acts like the same. And there's a safety mechanism to ensure the safety of our minds. And this safety mechanism is called as, there's a little bit of a technical term for that, a Pali term to be precise. What is that? Can you remember? Yes? Yes, it's called Abhisankara. I'm sure you have listened to that. Right? I mean, even if you have forgotten that, that's okay, right? That's just a technical term. So this Abhisankara is the safety mechanism of our minds. So it allows the excess pressure to be released. There's something very interesting happens when the pressure is released. So let me summarize that. So this pressure, when the pressure is more, when it gets increased, this safety mechanism gets activated. Now, it is exactly that pressure which is responsible for this release. Just as the pressure cooker, right? The pressure itself facilitates the release, right? But when this release happens, something interesting happens. It is felt, the released pressure is felt as if, how do you feel it? As a relief, right? What is it called? That is what you call as pleasure, a release from vexation or pressure, right? By pressure, I mean vexation. So this release is perceived as pleasure. It is perceived as an increased pleasure. Let me ask you a question. When the pressure cooker releases its pressure, what is increased in the pressure cooker? Let me ask that question again, right? Think carefully. When the pressure cooker releases its pressure with that hissing sound, right? Psst, right? When this releasing of pressure happens, what is increased in the pressure cooker? Does something get increased? Steam exits. The excess steam exits from the nozzle. What is increased? Nothing gets increased. Right? So I asked a wrong question. Sorry about that. But don't fall for that. If I asked a wrong question, if you try to attempt to a wrong question, you wouldn't find an answer. You might be looking for an answer, but will you ever find an answer? Because such an answer doesn't exist. Nothing gets increased in the pressure cooker. Likewise, when the pressure is released in our minds, nothing gets increased, but still you feel as if something got increased. This is the perception of pleasure, that what we feel. But what we feel is something really got increased. So this increased pleasure is your perception. You really believe in this pleasure. Not only that you believe in this pleasure, you think, I'm sorry to use this word you, right? The mind thinks that this pleasure is a truth. You know what? The mind believes actually this is the gospel truth. To all those who don't have a teacher or a guide or a mentor in their life, some people say that I don't believe in anything. I don't believe in them actually. Because they believe in something as the gospel truth, that is pleasure. If someone believes, or if someone not only believes, if someone have realized the truth, they don't believe in this. Not only they don't believe in this, they have realized that this is an illusion. Right? This is something that we feel in our minds. So there's a nice and classical example to compare this pleasure with. I think, I'm not sure whether I have told this before with you all as well, but that doesn't matter. Let's revise. Have you seen darkness in your life? You all have seen darkness, right? How can you create darkness? By turning off lights? Right? Okay. When you turn off the lights, the room, the entire hall will be darker. Then you would have created darkness. If the darkness is created, then that should be remaining even if you turn on the lights back again. If it is created, it should remain as dark spots everywhere. Will it be created? Will it be remaining like that? No. So then where can you find darkness? You can find lights, right? The rays of lights. Because there are sources of light. For example, electric lights, when they are when we supply electric energy to them, it emits light rays. Likewise, there are sources of light where the light rays are emitted. For example, a lit candle, a lit lamp, it emits rays of light. Likewise, have you found a source of darkness which emits dark rays or something? Tell me one source of darkness. Have you come across a source of darkness? What do you think? Tell me just one. What do you think about a black hole? Is it a source of darkness? What do you think? That attracts light. That is true. But does it emit dark rays or something? It doesn't have any power to emit such a thing as darkness. It attracts light. So, not even a black hole is a source of darkness. Why? There are no dark sources. There are no sources of darkness. And that proves that darkness is something that is not that is not physical. In the physical world, you cannot find darkness. You cannot prove this is what darkness is. You can only point to the absence of light. Absence of light is nothing physical. The light which is absent, show me. Show me the light which is absent. Do you have anything to show in the physical form? No. So, think very carefully. It is such a void that you refer to as pleasure. It's a pressure which is relieved. Now, can you show me the relieved pressure? It is no longer there. So, this is a wrong interpretation. A released pressure is not a pleasure. It's just a released pressure. It still is a pressure, but which is not increased, but a decreased pressure. Because of this wrong interpretation, right? This wrong interpretation is known as ignorance. Because of this ignorance, what is created? What manifests as a result of this? Yes, attachment, right? Because this pleasure remains the truth in your mind, attachment is created. It creates attachment, right? What do I mean by attachment? It's in general terms, it is liking. Liking. Now what happens when you like something? When you like something, ultimately you want it. You want to have it. Then it creates wanting. Now what happens? With wanting, what can you imagine? The wanting creates this pressure. This is the cycle. This completes the cycle, right? The pleasure that you experience, with the pleasure that you experience, if you take it as a whole, if you can't think of it as an effect of a cause, if you think that it comes from somewhere, then you start liking it. Does the mind take your permission before liking something? Shall I like this? Does it ask from you? There's a pleasure, shall I like it? It never gets your permission. This happens beyond your control. In each and every step, it happens beyond your control. This is what we have to internalize. Tell me, with the presence of pleasure, because this is what we have to reflect. This is one way of reflecting. The mind believes that this is the view that the mind has. My car, my petrol, and my life. Right? I am the owner of my life, and I can't control my entire life. Right? If that's so, ask from your mind. Okay. If this is your life, you have to be the creator of liking. Right? Who has created this liking? Me. The mind answers. Okay, yes, of course. I have created my likings. I am the one who created them. Then you can ask from the mind. So this is a little friendly conversation with you and your mind. Right? Then you can ask from the mind, okay, if you are the creator of your likings, you also should be able to not create liking when you don't want to create it. Right? Then the mind says, of course, yes. If I'm the creator, I have the ability to not create it as well. Now, then you shall ask from the mind, okay, tell me just one instance where you have stopped creating liking in the presence of pleasure. Because if you are the creator of liking, you should be able to stop creating liking while feeling pleasure. Right? Tell me one instance that you have stopped liking something. You don't like it while feeling pleasure. Tell me just one thing. Don't answer it right now, right? Let the mind think. Then it will be thinking, pondering upon. It might take few months or few weeks. Let the mind find it. Because this is the hardest thing. The hardest, deeply embedded view that you are trying to challenge yourself. Because the mind believes that it is my life, it is my mind, and I can control everything that goes through my mind. Therefore, the mind believes that my likings are my creations, and I have the control over them. And if I don't want to like them, I can stop liking. Can you stop liking? Do you know what? If you are the creator of your likings, do you know the easiest way to attain Nibbana? Don't like. Stop liking. So just take a firm resolve that from this moment onwards, I don't like anything. Can you take a resolve like that and attain Nibbana? Then it is a matter of few seconds. This liking is an effect of this course. And this happens beyond your control. This is what we need to realize. And it is very it's very funny. Why do I say that it is funny? Because just by realizing that it happens beyond your control, you gain the control. As you may have known, you may have heard that life is a riddle. Actually, this is the riddle of life. In each and every step, you have to realize that this step happens, each and every step happens beyond your control. That means you have no authority to control it. If you realize it completely, now the mind gives up. By giving up, this cycle stops. Right? This is a never-ending cycle. Right? Because this is self-sufficient. It's a vicious cycle. Just because of this ignorance. This is what? Which feeds this cycle up. What do you mean by ignorance? Not knowing that all these steps happen beyond your control. when you realize that it happens beyond your control, now this step is no longer there. Then what happens instead? What is the true interpretation of this release, of pressure? Sorry, of this pleasure? It's just a reduction of pressure. And this is the true interpretation. And it is known as that is the wisdom. Through this wisdom, can you see? If you interpret it wrongly, you are being carried away with this never-ending cycle. If you interpret it in the correct way, you are taken away from the cycle. Now this cycle stops, little by little. It takes time. And that is what is happening to you. This cycle is slowing down, little by little. It doesn't happen all of a sudden, right? So just imagine an aircraft is landing. Does it stop all at once? No, it takes a while, right? It decelerates along the runway. So while reflecting on the truth, while you improve on your wisdom, you are being taken away from this vicious cycle. And that is the path that you practice. So be mindful. Can I do this for you? Shall I reflect on your behalf? I can't do it for you. That is why Lord Buddha has said, Tumhehi kichang atappa, akkhataro tathagata, patipanna pamukkhanti, jaino marabandhana. So these are his golden words. He has disclosed, he has exposed the truth. Though he has exposed the truth 2,500 years ago, he could not have done that on our behalf. Because it's only us who can see this, which happens in our minds. We have to reflect on it. We have to come out of it by ourselves. Although he is the perfect one, he could not have done it on our behalf. We have to do that. On other occasion, he says, Attahi attano nato, kohi nato parosya. It is our responsibility and it is our duty. The help can only be gained through reflection of the truth. But in the first place, you might not know this theory. You have to know this theory from an external source. Of course, that is mandatory. That is why we all have teachers. All those teachers have guided us towards this truth, towards the reality that which happens in our minds. So this is, in a nutshell, which happens in our minds. Okay, but we didn't come yet to the essence of what Lord Buddha taught. Right? Let me have a brief glimpse on, again, right? So, with each and every step, we have to realize that this happens beyond our control. So I just took one example, this step. Can you remember the brief conversation that we had with our minds? First of all, we asked whether, is there an instance where you have stopped creating liking in the presence of pleasure? Right? You can ask a second question as well. What is that? Have you ever created liking in the absence of pleasure? Right? Can you remember the mobile phone that you are using, the day that you bought it? Can you remember that day? Can you remember how much You enjoyed it. You might have washed both of your hands before touching it. Right? Not only wash your hands, you even discharged all the static electricity which was in your hands, which might have damaged your mobile phone, your newly bought mobile phone. Then you held it with both of your hands very carefully and you unpacked it. Can you remember the gush of pleasure that ran through your mind? Now what happened thereafter? How long did that last? That pleasure last for? Maybe a few months? For some of you, maybe a few weeks. After a few months, what happened? Let's say after about 3 months, 4 months. Now, do you still keep up holding your phone both of your hands? No, you just hold it with one, maybe two fingers. Then how do you keep it on the table? Very safely. Or you just throw it out. So nothing happened to the mobile phone, right? Did you lose any parts over it? You might have got few scratches on the screen. That is a separate story, but still, it's working. Apart from that, nothing happened to the mobile phone. It's the same mobile phone. But what can you observe the pleasure that you gained through the mobile phone? It decayed. Little by little, it decreased over time. Then, could you have keep up to your words? I like this mobile phone. Right? When you the day that you bought your mobile phone, you made a promise to the mobile phone. Until the death do us apart, I keep liking you. Could you ever keep up to that promise that you made to that mobile phone? When you experience the reduced pleasure with time, what happened to your liking? But you made a promise. Can't you remember? You made a promise. Now, can you keep up to it? Are you the creator of your liking? Then why do you promise on the things that you are not in control? The liking happens beyond your control. Therefore, if someone made a promise to you on their liking, why do they do that? Because they don't understand this truth. Liking or the attachment is an effect. And what is the cause? Is there a person? Is this a person? No. The cause of attachment is a wrong interpretation or ignorance. They can keep on liking them. What is the synonym for liking? Loving them. As long as this ignorance is there. As long as this wrongly interpreted pleasure is there. But once they come out of it, come out of the ignorance, once they realize the truth through wisdom, what will happen to this? This liking will no longer be there. That doesn't mean that they don't care for you. Right? The people who have realized the truth are the most caring. Right? Beyond everything. Because they understand the real value of life. Why have we got such a precious life? They understand it, as you do. That is why having so much of responsibilities, duties, and this might be the only free day that you have for the entire week, and you have sacrificed that special day that you have for the week, for the entire week, for the realization of this truth, because you know the true value of it. Because this truth will set you free. You know that perfectly. That is why you have all come here. Isn't that the very reason that you have come here? Of course. So, having asked these two questions from your minds, by having a very friendly conversation, it improves your wisdom, because it actually hits a very hard blow to this ignorance, these two questions. Right? What is the first question? Have you created an effect in the absence of causes? Or have you stopped creating the effect in the presence of causes? Right? The same way, you can ask the same question, the two questions, with for this step as well. You can ask from the mind, have you wanted anything that you don't like? That means, I like it, but I don't want it. Is there anything like that? But if the mind says that, no, I am the one who create wantings, that I am the one who want. Now, this is a huge blow to that view. Now, you can ask the second question as well. When have you stopped wanting in the presence of liking? That means, I like it so much, but I don't want it. Is there anything like that? Then, I mean, be my guest. Ask from it. Ask these questions from your mind. You have to find the answers for yourself. And you might find some funny answers. Funny in the sense, sometimes you might confuse the lines of thoughts. I will explain what I mean by that. Let's say that when you shop, when you go to a shop, while shopping, you might have come across a nice piece of cloth. Then you might say to yourself, oh, this is amazing, I love it so much, but I don't have enough money, therefore I don't buy it. Right? That is true. In that instance, you say that, I like it so much, but I don't buy it. That doesn't mean that you don't want it. There are two lines of thoughts. Liking the piece of cloth and liking to save money are two lines of thoughts. Right? Because you have to save some money to come back to your home. Right? Otherwise, you have to be in the shop without returning to home while wearing that piece of cloth, right? Therefore, you have to save some amount of money to return home. So, when you like a piece of cloth, you want that piece of cloth. When you like to save some money, then you want to save some money. So, don't try to confuse these lines of thoughts. Otherwise, you might have come across evidence, yes, I like it, but I don't want it. But see whether there's a confusion between these lines of thoughts, right? Try to unwind those confusions, right? If you cannot realize it with yourself, then take some guidance, right? That is why we need the help of our teachers. Okay. If we come to the next step, right, wanting creates the pressure. But the mind says is, no. I create my pressure. I am vexed. Who is the creator of vexation? I myself create the vexation for me. Then you can ask from the mind. Okay, tell me an instance where you have created a vexation without a wanting. I have no wanting, but I'm vexed. Still I'm vexed. Look for such an occasion. And let the mind think. After a while, if the answer is no to that question, then you can ask the second question. What is the second one? Okay, then tell me. Tell me that you have an instance where you have stopped vexing, or where you have stopped pressure in the presence of wanting. That means I want it so badly, but I'm okay. I'm cool as a cucumber. I'm not pressurized, but I want it so badly. There's a impending, compelling wanting. Now you will realize. Then the other step as well, pressure and release. Have you released any pressure? Sorry, have you released something without pressure? That's a nonsensical question to begin with. Or, while having pressure, can you stop releasing it? Right? In that case, yes, you might have some answers to this question. There are some pressures which you can hold back. That means without letting them released, you can hold them back. You can hold them back because of another reason. Right? Let me tell you an example. Let's say there's a person who is addicted to sweets, but they are diabetics. They have diabetes, right? Now they're doctors. Now they have gone to, especially in this era, in this time of New Year season, right? They have tasted a little bit of sweets, more than usual, and they have checked their fasting blood sugars, and it is high up, right? Now with that report, when they go to their doctors, the doctor frowns at you, right? Now they strictly advise you that you can't do like this, not for long, right? Soon enough, you will get all the complications, all the microvascular complications. You will get your kidneys injured, your eyes, your brain, your heart, all of this will be affected, right? Then after hearing to those words by your doctor, now this person, this patient takes a firm resolve. From this onwards, I will not eat any sweet, right? Having taken up this resolution, now you go back to your home, and since it is Aurudu, right, you go to your neighbors and they serve you with all those sweets. Now, what do you do? No. I am someone who has taken up an oath in front of my doctor. I am diabetes. You know what? I don't want to lose my life so early. So you politely refuse to eat them. But you take some which is not sweet. Or you only take a very little bit, just not to hurt their feelings. Right? So there's a shift in this behavior. Right? So you can hold back the pressure to eat sweet to a certain degree. How is this possible? Because there's a pressure, there's certainly a pressure to have sweet, but without letting it be released by having sweets, you can hold it back. How is this possible? Can you remember they took a firm resolution, right? That is another wanting. What is that wanting? I want not to have sweets. Now you see, this is a very interesting phenomenon. In the mind, there's a battle between two wantings. This is the wanting to have sweets. Now there's another bigger wanting, bigger one. This wanting is to not have sweets. Which is bigger? the wanting not to have sweets. So which one creates a greater pressure? So wanting gives rise to pressure, right? So these smaller wantings create a smaller pressure. This bigger wanting creates a bigger pressure. So what do you think? Which pressure is going to be released? What do you think? Usually, I mean, the physicists would answer, right? The bigger pressure is always going to be released. Well, that is what happens in our minds as well. This creates a huge pressure. Therefore, this pressure is released, first of all. These wantings act against each other. They don't go hand in hand. They are opposing to each other. Right? This one pulls this direction and this one pulls this direction. They are not supporting to each other. So this is a combat. This is not the correct way. Let's say that this direction, okay, that might be another correct interpretation. This is a collision between two wantings against each other. So only one wantings win at the end of the day. Which wins? The bigger one. Because the bigger one wins, the bigger pressure is going to be released. Right? So, if you say that, if you ask from your mind, okay, is there any pressure that you have held back without releasing it? Might wonder, yes, there was a pressure that I was able to hold back. What can you say about this pressure then? Were you able to hold back? Anyway, one pressure always releases. Right? If you can hold it back, it can only be held back with the help of another huge pressure. But still, this pressure is released. That is what you mean, but the ability to hold this back, is that an ability? Or you're still under this concept. This pressure is anyway being released. That is what you mean by, yes, I can. I am able to hold this pressure back without it being released. Do you really believe that you have an ability to hold back a pressure? No. Instead, you have created a greater pressure. And that pressure is being released. That is why, unless this truth is established in the mind, all the other solutions are just like plasters. They don't find the solution to the root cause of this problem, right? What is the solution to this? How can you eradicate this wanting? It only happens by eradicating the liking. Eradication of liking happens only by eradication of the ignorance. That is the only truth. That is the only way, the only path that these wantings can be eradicated. Just by creating another greater wanting would only plaster its effect. No one could be able to see, because now that person is not eating any sweet. Does that mean that they have eradicated the wanting to eat sweet? No. But to the outward world, that is what is examined, that is what it appears. Therefore, this is not the way to realize the truth. But creating this kind of an opposing wanting might be helpful to you, right? Otherwise, you are directed towards demerits, committing demerits, where, sometimes there are habits which you need to suppress, at least suppress temporarily. Why? Otherwise, they would accumulate demerits. If there are such acts, we have to stop them, stop those habits immediately, otherwise they will be poisonous to our path. For such acts, for such habits, of course, these are helpful. Right? So, in that way, now you can untangle all those confusions that your mind might bring to you while reflecting. When you ask these questions, when you apply these two questions to this step, I hope you got something. Okay. Now, let me ask you another question. Let me introduce you to another phenomenon that Lord Buddha has taught us. Actually, this is the essence. I mean, this is also the essence, right? Because we think that we have the control of our minds. Right? With each and every step is a cause and effect. And then the effect of this step becomes the cause for the next step. Likewise, they are connected with each other. Now, I want you all to revisit this concept of cause and effect. If I ask about the effect, for example, let's say this liking, where does it come from? Where does the liking come from? It comes from the mind, right? Do you agree? Let me explain that, whether you can answer to that question by using another analogy. Let's take an example. When you collide your hands with each other, you produce a sound of a clap, right? If I asked you, where did that sound come from? Then you would answer to me all at once, of course, Swaminasa, the sound comes from the hands. Right? Now let us investigate that question. If the effect comes from, what is the effect here? The sound or the vibration. Now you know that the sound appears in the mind, right? So by sound I mean the vibration, okay? The vibration comes from, actually, if I were to ask you, what is the cause of this vibration? What do you think the cause of this vibration? The vibration is caused by the collision of the two hands with each other. Now, let me ask the same question that I asked you before. Where does the sound or the vibration come from? Let me rephrase that question like this. Before the collision of the two hands, right? Before the hands are collided, where was the vibration? Before the collision of the two hands, was there a vibration? Was there a vibration? And the question is asking about that place. Where does the vibration come from? That question assumes that there had been a vibration even before the collision. That is why it asks about a place, a storage house of vibration, right? Where did the vibration come from? Like what? I mean, as if there was a storage of vibration in the hands or somewhere else, and through that storage, the vibration pops up. Now, is that what happens? The vibration happens then and there when the hands are collided. Right? Therefore, what can you say about that question? Where does the vibration come from? Is that a valid question? Why that is invalid? Why do you say that question is not a valid question or that's a wrong question? Yes? Yes, because it is dependent on, it is based on a wrong assumption. What is the assumption that the question is dependent on? The vibration occurs even before the collision. Now, that is a wrong assumption. Because this assumption is wrong, this question is wrong. There is no fixed vibration. Vibration is not something fixed. It manifests when the causes are lined up. Right? Okay. Let me ask you another question. When you eat the piece of cake, as in our previous example, where does the pleasure come from? Of course, from the piece of cake, Swami answered, right? I mean, not only the piece of cake. Put another example that gives you pleasure. Because you can find sources of pleasure. Maybe for some of you, it will be a hot chocolate. For some of you, it will be a piece of music. And a movie, or a film, or hanging out with your friends. These are the sources of pleasure. So, do you really believe that these are sources of pleasure? Where does the pleasure come from? Do you have an answer to that question? If you have, mind you, you still have something to reflect upon. What is that? Whether that question is valid or not. Because that question assumes on something. What is that question assumes on? The question assumes on that the pleasure exists even before the reduction of pressure. What is the true cause of pleasure? Release of pressure or the vexation. Right? Before the release of pressure or the vexation, where was the pleasure? Of course, the pleasure was in the cake. Can you say like that? Now, if you have reflected upon this, if you have installed this concept within your minds, now you would know that. No, pleasure is an effect of a cause. What is the cause of it? The reduction of pressure, the mental vexation. When the mental vexation is reduced, the pleasure occurs then and there. It doesn't come from anywhere. It is an effect of this cause. So where is the pleasure? Where does the pleasure come from? That indeed is a wrong question. Pleasure is not embedded in anywhere. Pleasure is not stored in anywhere. There are no storage of pleasure. Can you store pleasure anywhere? Deep inside your mind, I can hear that sound. Of course, pleasure is embedded in that sweet piece of cake or in pizza, in whichever the food item that you are fond of, and the movie and the piece of music that you like to listen to. In each and every item of this, I mean, am I blaming you? No. This is the nature of the mind. That is why we have to come out of this by reflection. Through reflection, we have to come out of these wrong views. You don't have to be afraid or you don't have to be ashamed of this. This is the view the mind has. Because of this view, we are entrapped in this never-ending cycle. Because we have this wrong view, we have to reflect on this. Right? Little by little, we can come out of them. This pleasure that which manifests, that you can feel, is an effect of the cause. It doesn't come from anywhere. But if you feel that it comes from this thing, or it came from that person, or that event, now, that is the wrong interpretation. Because of that wrong interpretation, because of that ignorance, now you start liking it. Once again, now again you are entrapped in this never-ending cycle. I mean, you lose in a very tiny point. You lose it very easily. Therefore, you have to be very vigilant. So vigilant. If you are so vigilant, I'm sure you can catch it. You can catch where you lose. It is okay to make mistakes. Do I say that it's so bad to enjoy pleasure? No. I didn't mean to say that. Things happen because the pressure is intolerable. But when those things happen, but while facing to those events, reflect on the truth. How much of a pressure am I going through? It is such a pressurizing thing that I have to do this. I have to eat this piece of cake because I cannot tolerate this pressure. While reflecting on this, have the piece of cake. It doesn't mind. But while having the piece of cake, you're not pushing fuel or fueling this ignorance. You're stopping this cycle and while having the cake. When can you reflect on this? While having the cake or not while having the cake? That is immaterial, whether you have the piece of cake or not have piece of cake. But if you reflect on this, that is what is required. Technically, you should be able to do this while having it or not while having it. But there is a but, right? Why? Because if you let yourself to fall for the pleasure without at least stopping for a bit, you will always fall for the pleasure and you will take it as one. One means an entity. If you take pleasure as an entity, then all of a sudden you are being pushed, you are being compelled once again to this never-ending cycle. Right? Therefore, Lord Buddha says, Kanti paramang tapoti dikkha. This is the first advice, the Nova the Patimokkha. Right? Kanti means tolerate. As if you take a break all of a sudden. When you are being compelled by your internal vexations and pressure, you take a firm resolve that for a brief moment, I will stop for a brief moment. When you stop, now you can experience a huge pressure which is screaming deep inside your mind. For example, right? Let's say you are just about to have a piece of cake, right? Now you have it on your hand and you're just about to take it, and while taking this, at this distance, just keep it for a while. Will you be able to tolerate the scream that you can hear from your mind? The mind is screaming inside. Please let me have it. Right? So listen to that voice in your mind. What is that voice? It is the voice of this pressure. So capture the pressure. Once you have captured, you're safe. Why do I say that? Because it is the cause of this pleasure. Right? Once you have captured the pressure, now have the piece of cake or not have the piece of cake. It doesn't mind. Do whatever that you like. But capture the pressure first. If you not have captured the pressure, eating the piece of cake is like poisoning yourself because you are being taken away from this realizing the truth. Right? Because again, without capturing the pressure inside your mind, if you eat the piece of cake, now what will you experience? What will you capture instead of pressure? You will capture this pleasure. And once again, it is being proven to your mind, oh, this pleasure has come from this piece of cake. Oh, yummy. I like it so much. Right? Once again, you end up with the same cycle of ignorance and attachment. Therefore, first of all, take a break. Don't let your mind have what it wants. When you take that break, you can capture this pressure, this vexation. Once it is captured, now have the piece of cake. Now then you will be able to appreciate it is that amount of pressure that is just being released. That is why I feel this pleasure. This is not a pleasure. This is a huge pressure being released. Now you interpreted in this phenomenon in the correct way and you improved the wisdom. Did I ask you to stop eating cake? No, that is exactly not what I asked you to do. Keep on doing what you are doing, but don't do demerits. I ask you to refrain from doing all the demerits, right? That is what we observed before we listened to this sermon, right? The five precepts. The superficial meanings, at least, right? Don't do demerits, but rest of the things. If you hang out with your friends, if you watch movies, if you listen to music, I don't mind. Because, I mean, this doesn't apply to the ones who have ordained, and I'm we are not like this, right? Don't compare our lives with what we ask you to do, right? We don't do those things because we don't find any value in them. But if you still find some value in them, look for the value. Look, why do you do that? Okay, this is the thing, right? People say that they do things that they like to do because they like it, because they love to do them. For example, traveling around the world. People say that, I love to travel. But if you stop for a moment and think, okay, if I like to do this, what if I stop doing it? Will I be able to survive? Right? All the things that you do because you like it is not only because you do them just because you like them. You're not doing willingly. You are doing them because you have to do them. Otherwise, your life, your entire life will be a living hell. Why? Because you can experience this pressure. That is the true story of your life. Until we have realized the utmost truth, we have completed the realization, this is the true story. This pressure is our master. It is what handles our life. We are just being a slave. I'm sorry to use that word, but think carefully. What is the reality of our life? Do you think that you have freedom? You have freedom from this pressure? Or you do this just because this pressure is compelling you to do something? There is always the influence of pressure. Think very carefully. I mean, prove me wrong. I'm not challenging you. Challenge yourself with this concept, right? Challenge your own mind. Rather than I am challenging you, I challenge myself. So I'm just relating to you how I challenge. I challenge myself. I keep on challenging myself. I'm just relating to you. Because of those challenges, those are because of the views that are that the mind is embedded, because they are dependent on this ignorance, when the wisdom comes into play, those wrong views are dismantled. They go away. This is how we reflect upon. Therefore, I didn't ask you to wear white clothes always, right? Don't listen to music. Don't watch movies. Don't go to social media. Don't enjoy delicious food, right? Don't go on picnics. No, nothing like this. Keep on doing them, but I'm not encouraging you to do them as well, because that is immaterial. Whether you do them or not do them, that doesn't serve the purpose. Whether you do them or not do them, if you reflect on this, you can get out of this ignorance. That serves the purpose. I think I have I have made myself clear, right? That means I don't want you to do this. Try this, and if it suits you, and if it allows you to come out of this ignorance, and if it reduces the wantings, and you feel the release, you feel the eradication of pressure rather than the release of it, now you can get that experience. That experience actually proves you that this works. Rather than that, can I show you this? Can I show you my mind or the minds of my teachers? This has to be realized within yourselves. Okay, so we have been discussing the teachings of the Buddha, the pure teachings of the Buddha, and we have been applying them in our day-to-day life. So I hope you have got something to practice this in your day-to-day life. As we have discussed, it is so, we have to be so vigilant, because we always lose things within a fraction of a second. At a drop of a hat, we lose our attention, and we always fall for this wrong interpretation. We always fall for this pleasure. Therefore, we have to be very vigilant. Have you seen those cats? When they target at something, they have very sharp eyes, and they keep watching at just one target. Even if you try to move them here and there, they don't change their eyes. Have you observed this? You have to be vigilant like that. You have to look about your target. What is the target? Is there a pressure? Is there a pressure? How do you check it? By tolerating. Kanti paramang tapotitika. What does it mean? Capture the pressure. If there is any, if you do something, stop doing that for a second, for a fraction of a second, and that is how you check it. That is the litmus check, whether there's a pressure or not. If you want to say something, try not saying that. Then you will be able to capture the pressure. Having captured it, say that. But when you say that, you have appreciated the pressure. Therefore, you can reflect on the truth. That allows you to reflect on the truth. Otherwise, what you feel is this pleasure. Then always entitification happens around this pressure. You lose the chance to reflect that this pleasure is nothing but an effect of these causes. Right? Okay. I have not given you the permission to ask any questions. That is not fair, I know, because this is a very small crowd. We have few minutes to answer any burning questions. If you have any question, you can ask now. Okay. With the silence, it means that you have perfectly understood everything. I don't mean that. I know that we all need the guidance of our teachers, right? That is why we all come here. That is why I decided to stay here, right? Not only myself. There are many other monks who have gone to various ends in their lives, to the extreme ends. In their careers, in their academic lives, right? Many ends. They have all come together and they are practicing the same thing, and they realize an unseen side of their own lives. Why do you think that we all have come together and practice the same thing? Because this is what relieves us. This is what liberates us. This is what gives us the salvation that nothing else can ever offer to us. So as I told you a moment ago, I was also being seated like yourself a few years ago, not very long ago. And I was also questioning my mind, is this the truth? Because I had many other plans in my life. I wanted to be a very successful doctor, and I had many other dreams. I was, while in the middle of studying for my postgraduate exams, luckily, I got hold of this Dhamma before I faced them. Otherwise, I would have been a consultant. What for? I'm not insulting any consultants, because they do a massive job in healing patients physically, right? They are the ones who actually heal us, right? All of them come to our monastery and they conduct clinics and they heal the monks and the anagarikas and anagarikas and our noble heart sons and everyone for the betterment of all sentient beings. And they accumulate a huge amounts of merits. And that merits help them to realize this unfathomable truth. This is not unfathomable, but it appears as if it is unfathomable. But this becomes fathomable because of the power of the merit that they accumulate. Right? And I also encourage you to engage in heaps and heaps of merits, because you have come to the monastery. This is a rare chance for you. And therefore, I would like to remind all of you today at about 10 to 10:15, you all get the chance to get ready for the Sambuddha Puja, the midday Buddha Puja, and take part in them. At least do a slightest help, even with if you don't get to do anything, just do something. Appreciate the things that are done by others. At least try to bless them with your minds. That itself accumulates a huge merit to you. Right? So take part with those meritorious activities and engage in the Buddha Puja, and thereafter you have a beautiful opportunity to offer alms to the monks, who exceeds 100 in number. That's a marvelous opportunity for you. I think you have come here even before and you have got that chance, and that is a wonderful opportunity. And after the almsgiving, then you have the opportunity to get their alms bowls and clean it for themselves, for them, on behalf of them. And you can take there's a bowl for that you offer them with a cup. You can take that and clean it as well. Likewise, there are many meritorious activities. You will be guided by our anagarikas, and you can engage in those merits. And after the Buddha Puja and the almsgiving, there's a time period for you to have lunch. And after having lunch, and there's a small break for you, and up to 2:30 p.m. today, you have a time to reflect on what we have discussed today, right? You can question. Those two questions, can you remember? Whether you are the creator, whether my mind is the creator of liking, wanting, and many other things. You can likewise, or whatever the things that you have been practicing here, practicing the Dhamma, any other way, or the things that we have discussed here today, you can reflect. And you have three places where you can do that. Down there's a Valley Malu, where you can walk and you can be seated as well. You can reflect, because there are other people as well. I think you can share that. And there's a pagoda there, up there. And there's another Valley Malu around that pagoda as well. You can walk, you can be seated, you can go inside the pagoda as well, and you can be seated and you can chant the noble metta as well. And here's this Buddha Mandira. You can chant the Buddha Guna, and as well, while chanting, you can reflect on what we have discussed. So you have these three places to reflect on what we have been discussing, to practice the path. Right? Then at 2:30 p.m., now you have another opportunity to listen to our greatest master, Guru Thero's sermon in English. So starting from 2:30, it'll go up to around 4 to 4:30. You can listen to a magnificent sermon. He's the teacher for all of us. And I believe that you will gain a massive amount of knowledge as well as some logics to improve your wisdom. So I hope that you will gain maximum opportunity out of all the activities that are going to be conducted in this today's program. And I, from the bottom of my heart, I wish you, I bless you, that you'll be able to gain the maximum opportunity. Okay, so with that, we will conclude today's sermon. So having listened to, having reflected on the teachings of the Lord Buddha, we have acquired a lot of merits. Now we know that the merits that we acquire doesn't belong to ourselves only. Because we got this chance as a result of many people. That is what we have to always keep in our minds. Because of many others, because of the sacrifice that was made by many others, not only the parents in this life, what about the parents that were there in our previous lives? They are also responsible for this opportunity. Therefore, we will transfer these merits out to all sentient beings, because it is through their sacrifice that we got this opportunity to reflect on the truth. And let us do so by reflecting on this. So let us take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, listening to Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas, and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha, present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and who have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to our Guru Swami Mahanse and to all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also transfer these merits and express our gratitude to all those who make a great effort to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by sharing these opportunities with others or inviting others to join them. Let us also transfer the merits who have acquired to all those people who have acquired it, who helped us to the upbringing of this monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicine, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and extended their well wishes. Let us also transfer this merit to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, husbands and wives, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in any way, shape, or form. By the power of these merits, be they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer the merits to Devas, Brahmins, and spirits, primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as all other numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities, who always keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine powers and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our families, friends, and acquaintances in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let us also transfer these merits to all members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost their lives at war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits that we have acquired today. Let's also transfer these merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, and pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been our friends and family to us in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let us transfer these merits to them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves from the woeful plains and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired today, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds and thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired, you and I and everyone who have helped us to make this program a success, become an Arihat Unvanse, or Arihat Mehanin Vanse, in this very life and in this era of Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May through the power of the blessings of the merits that we have acquired, may the triple gem bless you all.